Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Our topic today is human trafficking. We'll talk about the nuances between sex trafficking, human trafficking, and labor trafficking, and learn how federal and state regulations are complex and different. We'll discuss the size and the gravity of the problem in Alaska, which is tough to do given that most human trafficking happens outside the spotlight. We'll also describe the ambitions and work of a new task force launched in September, a collaboration between many parties, but especially the State Department of Labor and the City of Anchorage. We invite you to visit the links on our website that include a report from the State of Alaska in 2013 on human trafficking, as well as some news coverage of the issue. And we invite your questions and observations on this topic. Your thoughts are welcome. You can give us a call in Anchorage at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or we'll also take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I want to welcome our guests into the studio today. We've got three fabulous guests. I'll go from my left. I'd like to welcome Heidi Dragas, Commissioner of Labor. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you.
Say hi to the masses.
Right? Hello, masses.
Okay. We have Robin Bronin, Executive Director of the Alaska Institute for Justice. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation to be here.
Very happy to have you here. Thank you. And we also have Mara Kimmel. I have human rights activist, professor, attorney, First Lady of Anchorage. So welcome, Mara.
Thank you very much.
And this, I think, happens to be, for all of you, a hot topic. And I don't know whether... It has been as long a battle for you, Heidi, as it has been, say, for Robin. I know Robin mentioned 15 years working on human rights issues in Mara as well. So I kind of would like to go round table a little bit and find out what brings you to this topic. And again, Heidi, I'm going to start with you. What I did hear is that the Department of Labor did come to the city and say, hey, let's reopen this. Let's keep talking about this with the new administration. Is that generally what happened and why?
You know, it is. I've only been on the job with the Department of Labor for 10 months, but labor trafficking is something that I had seen in my previous life as a general counsel for the Laborers Union in Alaska. I remember about 5 or 6 years ago, we had several Mexican immigrants that came into the office that were identified by one of our business agents, and they were clearly part of a labor trafficking scheme, and it was very heart-wrenching to hear their stories. We were lucky at the Laborers that one of our business agents, Sergio Acuna, is a Spanish-speaking business agent, and so he was able to translate for us. And just hearing their stories and the hardships that they go through, the language barriers, not knowing much about their community, not having friends or contacts outside their immediate circle, it's difficult to hear, and it's a difficult problem to tackle. It was difficult for us at that time. So I knew when I came into this position that it is something that lies beneath the surface. I think it's especially in labor trafficking, it's often very difficult to identify. Individuals are fearful or extremely hesitant to come forward. There's a fear of law enforcement.
This is not your home country, so you don't know how to read
exactly
consequences, you know, if you speak up. Yeah.
So I had a meeting with Mayor Berkowitz a couple months ago, and we both think found some common ground on this issue, and also, you know, his fabulous wife Mara is very passionate about this issue, and so we knew that there had been this task force previously that had done a lot
the state
of work
and Siri had worked on it. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So we decided let's take what they've done and revive it and carry it forward. They had already done an immense amount of work as it was, and we're simply kind of just taking the ball down the court a little bit further.
We do have a link to that. It's about a 30-page PDF, so you may not want to just hit the printer. But there's recommendations in there. There's background. So if this is a new topic to you, and I think for a lot of people, because it does happen in the shadows, you might live in Anchorage and not really perhaps be aware that it's closer than you think. So, Robin, let's go to you and talk a little bit about your involvement in this issue.
Sure. So my involvement began right after the federal legislation was passed. So Congress has, since 1994, passed legislation called the Violence Against Women's Act. And it's been to increase resources and criminal penalties involving crimes against women and children. And in 2000, they included legislation to criminalize human trafficking and also to create a multidisciplinary team effort to respond to, at that time, it was just human trafficking in the immigrant community. And 2 months after that legislation was passed, the first federal prosecution happened here in Alaska and was called the Crazy Horse case. And the way that we got involved was I was at that time working at Catholic Social Services, and the Immigration and Naturalization Service attorney contacted me because four Russian women were dancing at the Crazy Horse and had been arrested and taken to a detention facility in Seattle because they were dancing in violation of their visitor's visa. And we, our office, Mara and I were working together at the time. We immediately got involved and found out that there were actually seven women dancing at the Crazy Horse, two of whom were under the age of 18. And so that began our involvement in working with human trafficking in Alaska.
And this was the first case prosecuted under the federal?
Yes.
Wow.
That's... Yes. And just to add,
you don't really want to get on the record books with that, but, you know, it's sad that, that the first case was here, but... It's good too.
And that it's taken this long for us to actually build momentum, because at that time we were seriously lacking resources. So there were just basic federal benefits programs for refugees that did not exist here in Alaska, which made providing services to these seven young women really, really difficult, because they were without immigration documents. And if you have no immigration documents, you have no ability to get access to any public benefits. And I would add to what Heidi said, the fear of deportation, having contact with anyone, whether you are a medical provider or a social service provider, much less law enforcement, is terrifying, because you've been told over and over again that you will be deported if you seek safety and protection.
That's one of the findings in the original report, talking about a sense of fear and distrust among victims. So they don't have anyone to turn to, or if they're fearful of who they who would be a good candidate, they're afraid to go there. So let's go to you, Mara, just so we get to introduce everybody.
To round it out.
Round it out, yeah. So I don't know, did you go, I guess you were working with Robin back at the...
My involvement with human trafficking has been mostly as an immigration lawyer, and I did assist Robin in the Crazy Horse case to some degree, but I also worked with a variety of individuals who, as Heidi was just describing, were the victims of labor trafficking. And what's interesting is it's a statewide problem. We find it in a variety of sectors, industrial sectors. We find it in the fishing community, in the construction community. And in other segments of our society, it's throughout the state. So even if people are foreign-born and they're brought here under false pretenses to engage in some labor industry, chances are really good at some point people are coming through Anchorage, either because they have successfully fled the situation or they're en route to where they're supposed to be going. So my experience with trafficking has been much more in that labor vein. And then, as Heidi was pointing out, with Ethan's election to the city, both he and Heidi felt that this was a good opportunity to pick up a much needed, a very necessary service to provide, which is to coordinate law enforcement services around the issue of trafficking, to coordinate the legal services and the other social services that Robin was just describing to provide to victims. But then also a big piece of this is to educate the public about what the what trafficking is in the first place, and then figure out how we as a community can confront it. And so Ethan is particularly interested as well in looking at, there's a pretty substantial federal regulatory system around what is human trafficking, what are the consequences for it, and the same with the state system. We've now had a state statute in place for a couple of years, but what's lacking, or what we have an opportunity to do, is really figure out what the municipality can do as well to assist in both law enforcement and service provision to victims.
Okay. Well, I one of the things I wanted to do was discuss the difference between human sex and labor trafficking. And Robin, you said, well, really it all falls under human trafficking. But for somebody who doesn't, these are new terms, they might think there's nuances there. Is there anything we should describe to people about it, the difference between? I think people quickly think sex trafficking is really what it's, you know, that's the drama, that's the darkness. But actually, there's lots of other areas. And I read, you know, restaurant workers, home health care workers, construction workers. It's the labor force, actually, that could. And Anchorage being the kind of town it is, where, like Mara was saying, landing here and then heading out to where you might be working. I feel like our state is filled with people coming here for opportunity and yet perhaps not the most financial resources when they're starting a new life. You know, the circle of family and friends that might support you. It's just all missing. So is it hard for agencies to coordinate? Well, is there anything else to say about human and sex and labor trafficking for the listener?
Sure. And the one thing I did want to add that the city, I think, is also really focused on right now is enhancing language access for victims and also to work with law enforcement to ensure that law enforcement provides linguistically accessible services to victims as well. Because, as you point out, part of the problem is identifying the issue. And so if you have a law enforcement system that doesn't have the capacity to reach out to victims and to fully understand their story, we're going to miss things. And so Ethan recognizes that, this administration recognizes that, and is really, I think, making a very concerted effort at this point to ensure that all of the public safety components of the city's government have linguistically accessible services. So I would
How is that? I mean, are we just at the beginning of that? I'm thinking that the stat you hear always is 93 languages in the school district.
Right.
You know, are we talking about that volume of accessibility, or is it, you know, outsourced to a language resource? I mean, how does it happen? How do you get that?
So one of the issues, it's really awesome that we have a mayor who recognizes the need for language access, because one of the huge issues in our state is that there is no emergency service phone number in a language other than English.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so when we're talking about reaching out and making sure that people who are in these really horrific situations have access to not only law enforcement, but social service agencies, we need to be figuring out how we're going to make those services accessible to people who are limited English proficient. And as we've been talking, you know, not only are 93 languages spoken in Anchorage, mm-hmm. but it's statewide, mm-hmm. right? I mean, if you look in the fishing industry, as an immigration attorney, I've gone out to Unalaska on multiple occasions and provided immigration consultations in the fish processing plants. And I remember the first time that I went to Unalaska, I thought I was landing in another country, mm-hmm. because the diversity of the workforce is truly awe-inspiring,
mm-hmm,
you know? And actually, in the fish processing plants, they are language accessible. Like you walk into the fish processing plants and they have signs about interpreters provided, and their information signs are in at least 6 different languages.
Mm-hmm.
So they recognize this importance in communication to the people who are working in those facilities. And so language access is a huge component of figuring out how to make sure that folks who are in this situation receive the services that they need. And in the Alaska Institute for Justice, we have a language interpreter center.
Mm-hmm.
So our agency, Mara and I, were 2 of the co-founders, and we were 10 years in existence. And in 2007, we opened a language interpreter center, which was really the Alaska court system led the effort to recognizing that there was a huge issue in regard to language accessibility in our community and that we collectively needed to do something about it. And so they brought together groups of individuals in the legal, social service, and medical fields, and who collectively decided that we should create a language interpreter center. So we train bilingual Alaskans. We've trained close to 400 bilingual Alaskans in 42 languages.
Mm.
And then we are a referral service. So those interpreters that we've trained are available to medical, legal, and social service providers so that folks are using people who understand the ethics, which is huge, and roles and responsibilities of working as an interpreter.
So that's great. And what year did that roll out?
2007.
So not that long ago, right? I am stunned about, I've read the history of people from the Philippines who've been coming to Alaska since the 1700s. I didn't know it was, you know, back to the whaling ships and swinging by the Philippines and picking up a workforce and bringing them to Alaska. It just, so it's 2007 is when we really developed that language. Are there more languages that you want to add to that, or do you feel it's where it needs to be?
So language access is a really complicated issue, particularly for the terminology is called languages of limited diffusion. So those are languages like Somali, Sudanese, Yupik, where, so I'll talk about the immigrant languages. So for instance, for people who are here from Somalia and Sudan, we don't have large communities of people from those countries. And so it makes it really hard for us to find folks who've got the skill level, because being an interpreter is a really hard job.
Right.
You need to be able to be fluent in two languages. You have to have awesome memory.
Yeah.
You've got to actually be kind of like a lawyer and a doctor, because you're negotiating all these terms that you need to understand, because words like due process don't exist in lots of languages. And
right.
So you've got to be able to figure out how it is you're going to communicate this very English language term that has tremendous significance in a language or a culture where that doesn't exist, right? That concept of due process doesn't exist.
Right, right. So if you've just joined us, I just want you to know this is Hometown Alaska, and we have some terrific guests on the show. We're talking about human trafficking, and we have Heidi Dragas from a Commissioner of Labor here because there are labor issues involved, Robin Bronin from the Alaska Institute for Justice. She's been working for a long time in this area, and Mara Kimmel, who's been an attorney in immigration issues. And all three of you were at, I think, the task force that started yesterday. Let me throw out our numbers in case people want to call, and let's talk about the task force. 550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 statewide. And you can also send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. If you've got questions about trafficking or legal issues or the state of the issue here in Anchorage and in Alaska, we've got people here who can really address those issues, so we welcome your calls. So session two of the task force was yesterday, I learned. What did you do, and what's surfacing as your sort of big issues that you want to tackle?
Well, one of the things that I wanted to mention, we've called this the Alaska Human Trafficking Working Group. And I think Robin highlights one of the very reasons why we wanted to continue the effort of the previous task force on trafficking. And one of the things that we've learned as far as best practices for combating human trafficking is getting all the people in the same room and talking. Because, yesterday when we were sitting there and talking about language services, which is a huge issue for whether you're talking about labor trafficking or sex trafficking, and a lot of the folks at the table, we had individuals from the Department of Public Safety, the FBI. So we had law enforcement, different state and federal agencies. The Office of Children's Services was there, DOJ, as well as a lot of the volunteer service providers. And it's important that all these individuals know what services are out there. So folks that may not have been aware that there are these language services available with Robin's organization know that now. It's difficult to tackle this issue when you're operating in silos, which is one of the reasons why it is so essential that you get all the players that are really involved in human trafficking in Alaska and in Anchorage in the same room. So it was, for that reason, I learned an awful lot in the meeting yesterday. And I think that everyone felt like, if anything, one of the best things about it is if you have a question or you have a concern, now you know at least who to go to mm-hmm. and who to talk to. So I think that's critically important.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn yesterday that really, anything really surprise you, or does it confirm your suspicions of what's going on? I mean, the reason I'm talking about this is because it happens in the shadows. It's not, you don't see it out on the street necessarily. You don't see it, the person working next to you. I mean, so I'm looking, two things. You know, you said you learned a lot. I thought, well, what did you learn that was new? But two, I would like to help people understand the scope of the problem, and is there any way we could get at that? How big is it? How do we know how big it is?
Well, I'll give one example that stood out for me, and which is when, in particular, we were talking about women, vulnerable women who are getting out of the sex trafficking trade. One of the things that is a huge problem is that women are often fearful to go to some of these women's shelters because their pimps know that they are staying at these shelters. And so they will wait outside in a car and basically wait it out until the woman leaves the facility. And the problem is that when these women need to leave and say they do, it's very difficult to get them to talk to law enforcement and engage in the issue at all. But when they do, they don't have a ride to get there. They don't have a way to get to the next stop. They don't have a way to go and
truly on their own.
Talk to an immigration lawyer. Uh-huh. They don't have a way to go and get groceries or get basic necessities
get
that they
restarted.
Need.
Yeah.
It's uh-huh. it's really, really difficult. And so one of the things that we seem to be lacking in our community is someone to escort these women or these victims from going from place to place. And I wasn't even, you know, it's intuitively it makes sense, but it wasn't something that was on my radar. It was certainly on the radar of a lot of the individuals in the room, but that was one particular nugget that struck me as
new information for you.
As really, this is something, okay, there's something that we can do about that.
I can identify. You know, a role, you know, resources are probably always a question, but maybe resources can be applied. But it's a very, you can picture the movie of the person, you know, you can
exactly.
see it. It's something
exactly.
you can imagine working on. Let's talk about scope, because when I saw one report, I think it was off of the 2012, it was a news report, and the FBI agent, I think it's Jolene Godin, said, oh, 7 federally prosecuted cases and 105 victims, and that was 2012. Do we have any way of knowing how big the problem is?
Well, so I just wanted to add on in terms of where we're at with the working group or the task force continuation. I think, too, it's really important to understand that this working group is in a very nascent phase.
Mm-hmm. It's meeting two, right?
Well, it's met twice. Uh-huh. And I think that what to me was insightful yesterday was the need for continuing conversation about, first of all, what is the problem and understanding what is the problem. And that there's not, I think, a general consensus even amongst those of us who work with the situation on a regular basis. And part of that is, Robin said that the trafficking, the federal legislation was passed in 2000. I can't remember the exact year that the state legislation was passed, but that really speaks to the fact that it has taken humanity a very long time to actually name a phenomenon of trafficking. Once we begin to name something, we can start to recognize it and understand the dynamics behind it. Mm-hmm. And then we can start to problem solve and figure out ways to get victims help and mm-hmm. to get law enforcement engaged. We're still on that path. Even these 15 years later, even these however many years later from the state statute, this is still an unfolding process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, one of the benefits to having this working group come together is that we can unfold this process together. But we're mutually informing each other of it. One of the pieces, I think, that came out of yesterday that speaks to your question is this notion of data. We don't have a lot of information. And part of the reason that we don't have a lot of information is we don't know what we're looking for yet, at least in some forms of trafficking. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a challenge that we're going to have to take on.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I would...
Robin.
Yeah, no, well, and thank you, Mara, because that is, very accurate in regard to the naming of the problem, because I think part of this, for me, and the frustration is to understand the context of how this happens, right? So this doesn't happen, human trafficking, whether you're talking about sex or labor, does not happen in a vacuum. And in actually, we create the societal context for this. And what I mean by that is if you look at our immigration laws, they are profoundly unjust and make it extraordinarily difficult for people to come into the country. And that provides the opportunity for traffickers to take advantage of people who want a better life, who are trying to feed their families in their countries of origin, and so think that by coming into the United States, they're going to be able to do that. And then they're put into these horrific situations. Mm-hmm. In the context of sex trafficking, what's really important for me in thinking about that issue is that this is part of a continuum of violence, that most of the sex trafficking victims that we've worked with who are U.S. citizens have had the experience of being victims of child sexual abuse or sexual assault or domestic violence. And if we don't get a handle on responding to those issues in a way that is trauma-informed and victim-centered, we are providing then the context in which they will potentially be the victims of human trafficking.
It's so, like a repeating cycle. Yeah.
Yeah. So if we don't look at it in this, in the context in which we as a society are enabling this horrific crime to happen, then we're not going to get to the root of how we're going to prevent this to happen.
Could you give an example of like how the deck is stacked against someone who comes here looking for opportunity? You mentioned specifically that the laws are very difficult. Could you sort of help us see that?
Sure. So in the United States, there are very, very few ways that you can legally enter the country and work. It's primarily if you have a family member, and that family member has to be an immediate relative, your parent, your child who's over the age of 21, maybe if you're a U.S. citizen, your sibling. There are some employment-based visas, but they are extraordinarily difficult to get. You've got to show that you've got a skill that no other person in the United States have. And all of the, except in the family context, all of these visas are really difficult. And if you look at, we are in the midst of a refugee crisis right now, not only in Europe, here in the United States. There were, I think, 80,000 unaccompanied minor children who crossed the U.S.-Mexico border last year.
80,000?
80,000.
Wow.
And these are children who are fleeing horrific crimes in their country of origin, and their parents are desperate to get them to safety, right? And we have worked with some of those individuals, and some of those individuals were trafficked, right? So their parents give them resource, minimal resource to get from whether it's Guatemala, El Salvador, to the United States, and then they are victimized by the people who they look to have them cross the border. And they're victimized horrifically, right? And so I was just reading, President Obama created for the first time in U.S., you know, recent U.S. history, a refugee program for these children so that they wouldn't be subjected, right, to this victimization. And 5,400 children applied in Central America, and none have yet been able to get here.
Wow.
So, you know, so that's the context.
That's a scope. There's some scope for you right there.
Yeah, right.
And that's so, just children we're talking about,
Yes, and children who are seeking safety and protection and can't find it in their countries of origin.
Yeah. I was thinking about the labor issue, and some people might say, well, we have to protect jobs here or things like that that might be. But Heidi, you gave a speech, it was in July, in which you talked about actually people bringing workers here and taking advantage of, in other words, the trafficker was taking advantage of labor laws here. Do you know what I'm talking about? I'm just trying to remember where this was. Do you remember this?
I'm trying to see what. this wasn't a.
Or maybe it wasn't a speech.
It wasn't a speech. It was an
op-ed. Yeah.
Yes. You know, I think. As far as whether there are employers skirting the law and bringing people here, I don't know if they necessarily take advantage of the law here as much as, you know, it's very easy and it's very profitable to bring in folks who are, it's basically enslavement of these workers. And I was reading a study where the average sex trafficking victim generates $24,000 in profit a year, and the average labor trafficking victim generates $5,000 of profit a year. I mean, that's pretty astronomical, and that is the reason why these perpetrators continue to engage in this criminal activity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons, especially for labor trafficking, why it is an enterprise that works here in Alaska. A lot of the labor trafficking victims that we see, whether they are in construction or in the seafood processing industry or in other industries, is because we have so many remote communities here in Alaska. Some of the labor trafficking, questionable labor practices, I should say, have happened in the timber industry, in the seafood processing, where a lot of those places are extremely remote, like in Alaska, mm-hmm. And in other areas. And so that is one of the biggest problems. It's hard to get at the problem. It's hard to identify the problem. Nobody is there. Mm-hmm. And so that's a huge issue. But like Mara said, they almost all come through this hub in Anchorage before they go to these other communities. Mm-hmm. But one of the problems that we have, especially in labor trafficking, is trying to identify those markers before they go to those communities or when they're in those communities, how to identify it, because simply because somebody is not speaks English as a second language or doesn't speak English as a primary language doesn't necessarily mean that the employer is engaging in labor trafficking. But there are markers that you can look for, and maybe Mara can speak to those a little bit more, but it's something that we as a community that is engaged in this working group has to do a better job of first understanding and then educating the public on.
Right. We're going to take a little break, but we'll come back and we'll talk about those markers, because I think as an audience member, you know, I want to know. I want to know how I can be better informed or how I can see it and be more aware. So if you know, we're going to take a little break. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. Our guests today are Heidi Dragas, Commissioner of Labor, Robin Bronin from the Alaska Institute for Justice, and Mara Kimmel, an attorney and a professor and an activist for human rights. And we're going to come back and talk about what are the markers, how do you identify, or at least where do you look? And we'll be right back. This is Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today's topic is human trafficking, and it's horrible to listen to the stories and think about people having so few options and being their life and well-being jeopardized this way, but it's happening in Alaska. Our guests are Mara Kimmel and Robin Bronin and Heidi Dragas, and we're going to come back let me throw out our phone numbers for folks if they have questions or comments about this topic, 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So we were going to try to get at the markers or indicators. Can we go there just to sort of help people? And I'm picking up that it's difficult. Some areas it's easier to imagine where this activity might be taking place. Others it's harder. There's fewer red flags. How can we talk about that? So we're going to go to Mara.
Thank you. Well, one thing I did want to say, though, before we get to the markers, because I think it feeds into the markers, is this notion that the impetus behind creating legislation prohibiting trafficking, other than it's a horrific crime in and of itself, is to bring people out of the shadows. And so in the immigration context, if you are a victim of either labor or sex trafficking and you help participate in the investigation or the prosecution of an offense, then you will be able to seek to remain in the United States, not as more than a witness, but because you can ultimately get some legal status to stay here and help out the law enforcement practice. And the reason that Congress felt that that was so important to do is because otherwise there was absolutely no incentive for people to come forward.
Why risk that?
Why risk that? Uh-huh. And so I think that the evolution, though, of identifying sex trafficking and identifying labor trafficking are on two very different trajectories. And we are a lot farther down the road with identifying and understanding the dynamics behind sex trafficking. And as Robin very astutely pointed out, it's part of a larger dynamic, a larger dynamic of violence. We have come a long way, not long enough, not far enough in our society, but a long way from where we were 10, 20, 40 years ago with regard to understanding sexual violence. And so we were able to distinguish and discern some of those identifiers a lot easier. Where it's more difficult, I think, is with labor trafficking. We don't really, again, understand what it is we're looking at. We haven't named it sufficiently to be able to identify it. And so, Heidi talked about an instance where people came into the union,
and
self-identified almost. And that was my experience as an immigration lawyer, is I would get people coming into the office saying to me, you know, I'm forced to work 20 hours a week. They've taken my passport away, and I'm made to work for it. They pay me and they deduct wages for every little thing,
so
including if
making
I
any
look
money
over my shoulder. Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. And so at this point, the burden is really on the person who's being trafficked to put it all together and to seek help. And so I'm hoping that that is one of the things that this new working group can do, is to figure out ways to be more proactive and to educate our communities about the existence and extent of what's going on in some of these industries. But ultimately, it is really important to understand that the bottom line is to stop the crimes from happening. And working with victims is definitely a critical part of law enforcement. It's also obviously in our own interest to make sure that our own community members are safe and secure and able to live happy and fulfilling
lives. It makes
me
think about the need for allies in all these different communities and whether that's a path where people trust people they know, or they trust people that are like them or have similar background. And I just wonder whether that's one path, you know, sort of does the task force include people not just from agencies that work on this issue, but from communities, you know, that are affected by this?
At this point, in terms of physical geographic communities, it's the city of Anchorage and the State Department of Labor. So we haven't, again, it's a very new working group. We haven't quite figured that out. There are yesterday's meeting, for example, we had, I think as Heidi and Robin both said, representatives from different sectors of our community, including law enforcement, service providers.
I guess I was thinking of cultural communities that where large groups of people are coming up here for opportunity, and there is maybe a forward guard that's already arrived. And, you know, I just wondered if that was help.
I think I would answer that. I think that's something that's next on the horizon.
Yeah. So I'm not suggesting you should have been there by now. It's just like, I guess it just seems like that might be a natural path.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's something that I think should is an obvious way forward. One of the things that we've done at the Department of Labor is we have published wage and hour frequently asked questions in several different languages, and I think in five or six languages now, and they are all on our website. And our wage and hour staff has gone out to some of these communities, the Hispanic community, the Filipino community, the Yupik community, and talked to leaders and individuals in these communities and explained to them some of their labor rights. And that was at least a place to start. And it's something we would like to continue to do. It was a highly successful effort especially in a lot of these immigrant communities that are certainly exploited, if not labor trafficked, then certainly a high instance of wage and hour violations. And so, and we had translators there to talk about these issues. So I do think that that is a that's a terrific place for us to start to try to go into these communities
around the state, or is this all in Anchorage that you were working at? I'm just curious.
I think it's something that we've started almost as a pilot project here in Anchorage, and we would like to continue it in other communities as funding allows. I don't need to get into the budget woes of the state right now, mm-hmm. but it is something we would like our wage and hour staff to really continue. At the very least in Fairbanks and in Anchorage and some of the other hub communities.
Mm-hmm. So, and I want to thank you, Commissioner, for doing that, because that is groundbreaking for our state. Mm-hmm. I mean, really.
Talk about that. Yeah.
Well, because when we're talking about language access, you know, I think it's some of the first information that has been translated. Like when we're talking about safety and protection in our state and people who are the most vulnerable, having information in your first language is critical mm-hmm. to understanding what your rights are and what you can do about it. And so thank you for doing that, because that is a really, really big deal.
It's a big outreach.
Can I add something as well, too? So the city has been promoting itself as an incredibly diverse community lately, and we've really taken great pride in the fact that we speak over 100 different languages in our school, and we've got the most ethnically diverse neighborhoods and high schools and elementary schools. And I think that at this point, it's time to activate that diversity. It's time to do more than just pay lip service. And so I'm building on this a little bit insofar as it's not just the quote-unquote vulnerable communities that we need to make sure we're paying attention to. It's all of Anchorage, mm-hmm. and it's all of Alaska. And so looking at policies of integration and policies of justice and taking down barriers to entry for workforce development and for education and for basic social services and legal services and medical services by tearing down language barriers, for example, but also other barriers, I think is a really it's an important value of this administration. And it's something that that we're really hoping to build, is that we are now, that's great that we're so diverse. Let's actualize it mm-hmm. and let's have our public policies reflect the fact that we take such great pride in that. Mm-hmm. So it is more than and I think that requires some structural changes that hopefully, even though it may be more attenuated in terms of, you know, directly addressing issues of trafficking or violence against particular communities.
It's the tools.
But moreover, it's the framework. It's who mm-hmm. we want to be.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And we want to be the most diverse community and the most just community. You know, we want to provide and make sure that people have access to opportunities in our city.
Right. I know I've read some research about, there's some people I've met working on this, about the resilience in the immigrant community. I mean, to have finally gotten here, they have had to overcome many, many, many difficulties. So there's a great well of resilience, even if they're not at their strength when they arrive or whatever. They change places. They bring so much. And so I guess I just feel like you don't want to, you know, lose that. I mean, you want it to settle in and thrive.
So there are two really interesting movements happening around the country right now. One is, and both are very city-based. Sorry, Heidi, but we're city-focused right this second. both are very city-based. One is this development of resilient communities. And in large part, that's in response to changing climatic conditions. And so how do we ensure that our communities are capable of dealing with the acute shocks that occur from changing weather and changing climate conditions, but also earthquakes and floods and fires and coastal erosion and all of that. So on the one hand, dealing with acute shocks, but on the other hand, dealing with chronic stresses. And those are things like lack of access to meaningful employment, lack of access to transportation. Those things create stresses for communities so that they're more vulnerable and less able to deal with it when we have a major earthquake or an emergency. And so Anchorage is really taking on both of those two arenas in tandem, and really understanding, I think, exactly what you just said, that the immigrant refugee community that we have in our city and in our state is incredibly resilient just by definition.
And has a lot of vitality.
But yet, you look at situations like we just issued a great report that Anchorage has 5% unemployment, and that's fantastic. But then you look at Mountain View. Mountain View is struggling with an 18% unemployment. And you look at the statistics about the median household income for Anchorage, and it is twice what the median household income is for people living in Mountain View. So there are these structural inequities that are preventing community-wide resilience and community-wide justice that, again, we're focused on right now.
Right. And it can be easy to not notice that if you don't have a reason in your work or a reason in your life or to sort of open your eyes and get out of your comfort zone a little bit and see what's going on. I mean, it sort of calls for a town hall meeting or something. I don't know. You know, some it does make me think how if people are listening to this and they're thinking, wow, I want to get involved. That sounds like a really that's going to lead to a better Anchorage, a better state. You know, is the task force open? When will there be an opportunity for people to engage, or do we know yet? Is it just a there will be and wait and listen? What do you think?
I would say at this point, stay tuned. We are still working on getting laying the groundwork for this working group. And I'm excited about the enthusiasm of the law enforcement community and the victims' rights community, and the amount of manpower hours that have been dedicated to this by the city and also by our department. I think that there is absolutely an opportunity in time to get public input. I think that's that has to be part of the process. We as a a community that sees this, this working group, folks that are involved in this working group see this type of human trafficking, labor trafficking, sex trafficking. We deal with this on a daily basis, but we alone can't. We can't combat the issue. We can't combat the issue alone. We have got to have community input, and we have to have public outreach in order to identify where this is happening. And I think that will absolutely be part of the process as we continue to roll this out. We really worked on at this this meeting yesterday, looking at coordinating enforcement, which is extremely important.
Are you talking federal, state, local?
Federal, state, and municipal.
Municipal.
Trying to coordinate that effort early on. I think it might have been even before I had met with Mayor Berkowitz on this. At the Department of Labor, we hosted, the FBI came and talked with us about this along with some of our staff from Wage and Hour. And my staff in the commissioner's office to talk about this issue and talk about coordination. And I was heartened to know that there was some coordination, but there were also, just in that a meeting alone, we found some areas where we can collaborate even further. So I think that was good to know, and we're continuing that effort within this working group. But we need to work on coordinating enforcement. Also coordinating services for these victims and knowing about what services are out there. Certainly I think one of the things we identified in the meeting that is a problem is housing for victims of labor and sex trafficking.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Particularly for sex trafficking, because in the community of sex trafficking, it's very difficult for these women to escape their pimps. It's a horrific issue. It's a horrific crime. But one of the things I learned is that these women are afraid to go to these shelters, and we don't have this private. I don't want to call it secretive. I'm sure there's another word for it. This housing that can it act as a safe harbor for these women whose pimps know where these women's shelters are. That alone isn't solving the problem, because the women who are victims of sex trafficking aren't going seeking out those services because they're afraid of who might be there waiting in the shadows,
or that they can get help for a brief, but then they're right back. Let me just just, remind folks, we're talking about human trafficking in Alaska and in Anchorage. There's a new task force between the State Department of Labor and the City of Anchorage, and with many other players coming to the table to talk about this issue. It's hard to get your arms around because it's not all that visible, but the people who work in it know that it's there and that there's lots of room to, as you were saying, coordinate, provide more services. So if you have questions about it, we'd welcome your call at 550-8433 or give us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Something we haven't talked about, and, you know, if this isn't a good area, tell me, but runaway children seems to be, I saw that come up as an area of real vulnerability, and we do have, you know, Covenant House in our own town. So there are young people. I'm trying to say, is that, and also I'm thinking of the Anchorage School District. You know, I started to think about mandatory reporting. You know, when children are in danger, there's a mandatory reporting. But of course, people who are getting caught in trafficking situations are not always children. That a lot of times they're adults. There's no, is there any requirement for people to raise the red flag if they see something? Is there in the labor area? Don't know.
As far as a requirement.
Not really.
I'm not aware of any requirement. But I certainly think we have a moral obligation. If you see something that seems untoward, you say something. Mm-hmm. The individual that I discussed in the opinion piece that mm-hmm. I wrote a month or two ago, It was a young man who was working in a Mexican restaurant, uh-huh. and there was the reason that we knew about it is because a customer saw something that seemed wrong. It seemed that something was out of place, and so she said something, and that's how we found out about the situation. So oftentimes, as it is with so many things, it's a gut reaction mm-hmm. that something doesn't seem quite right. So I think, you really have to have a proactive public that's willing to say something, willing to make that phone call. And I do think we have those individuals out there that are willing to step forward, and we need to do a better job of educating the public not only if they see something should they say something, but try to let them know where they should go.
And let's talk about that. I mean, I can add these phone numbers to the website at alaskapublic.org, or, you know, we can suggest people call. Where should they call?
Yeah. So
if you see something.
Well, you can call our office, the Alaska Institute for Justice, 279-2457. So we're the only agency in Alaska that actually receives federal funding right now to provide comprehensive services to all human trafficking victims. And we are working.
Is it enough? Probably not.
Well, it isn't, yeah. But it It absolutely isn't in regard to the housing issue. Like, mm-hmm. that is a serious problem. And AWAKE is actually a really important component of providing safety for these victims mm-hmm. because, honestly, the level of violence is similar to in a domestic violence. I mean, all domestic violence perpetrators know where AWAKE is. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why AWAKE is a great facility is because they have an immediate connection with law enforcement if anything is awry. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in regard to the comprehensive services that we provide, we are working very closely with Covenant House because it's not only legal services that we're providing social service support. So if that person needs medical assistance, mental health services, if they need to get access to public assistance benefits, mm-hmm. If they need to get back into school mm-hmm. because they're a young person, we do all of those things and are guided by what the person needs in figuring out how to move beyond the victimization that they've experienced to mm-hmm. be a thriving member of our community. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that the staff person in our office is doing is going to Covenant House on a regular basis.
I was thinking about that kind of outreach.
Yeah. So one of the pieces that we've all mentioned is, it's not very likely that somebody is going to come into our office and immediately identify of being in this situation. In our experience, actually, you know, over the almost two decades that Mara and I have been doing this, people do come into our office, but it's not what they reveal immediately. It's through the building of a relationship that we then understand the context in which they've been victimized. And so in the context of this work, we are really open to going to wherever people, agencies, like with the Department of Labor, need us to go to make contact with people who they think are in this situation, because we want to make our services as easily accessible as possible. And having a free lawyer on your side is a really big deal. It is, right? I mean, because a lot of the folks, one of the things that we talked about yesterday was the fact that in the context of sex trafficking, a lot of the people who have been victimized actually have criminal convictions for prostitution. And that permanently affects their record and their ability to get employment into the future. And having a lawyer on your side who can get those convictions erased is a really powerful tool that we can offer somebody who's really trying to get out of a horrific situation.
Yeah, that's important. I was thinking about, you know, we have just a couple more minutes and sort of going around and inviting each of you to leave the listener with something important to take away with. And we have a couple minutes, so you don't, it's not one sentence. You can think about it a little bit. Does anybody want to start?
Well, I think one thing that I would add is, you know, I think the Alaska Institute for Justice is a great place for people to start. As far as calling in to, you know, when you recognize or when you think you see something that may be or a victim of trafficking. You can also call our wage and hour offices at the Alaska Department of Labor. Our main number in Juneau is 907-465-4842, but you can go to our website and we have several different wage and hour offices. Mainly in Anchorage, Juneau, and in Fairbanks, and call our office and let us know and let our wage and hour investigators investigate it. I think it's really important that we get the, because especially with labor trafficking, it's so difficult to identify when you have a gut feeling. My sense is go with that gut feeling and make that phone call, because you never know whose life you may change for the better.
How about you, Robin?
Well, I'm just really thankful to be here with both the commissioner and with Mara Kimmel, because, I mean, really, we have a tremendous opportunity right now to really address this issue in a comprehensive way. And so I'm really appreciative that the municipality and the state are taking this issue seriously and are providing resources in trying to move us forward in providing really a comprehensive response to address this issue.
I was just reminded of this professor who said Anchorage is right on the fence with embracing the notion of being this wonderful, diverse and you know, internationally rich city, or folding up and saying, oh, it's too hard, it's too expensive, it's whatever. And, you know, I feel like, you know, this collaboration of all of you is a part of moving forward toward embracing that. Mara, I'm sorry. Do you
No, that's okay. We are embracing it. And so join us and embrace. And I would like to express my appreciation to Heidi and to Robin for the incredible work that you're doing. And stay tuned, because we are in the beginning, but we are embracing it.
You will be hearing more about the task force and better situations coming ahead for folks. So thank you all very much for joining us. And I want to thank Heidi Dragas, Alaska Commissioner of Labor, Robin Bronin, Executive Director of the Alaska Institute for Justice, and Mara Kimmel, human rights activist, attorney, professor, First Lady of Anchorage. Thank you for being here. Next week on Hometown Alaska, Charles Warforth will be back as your host, and his topic is our annual shout out to local volunteers to say thank you. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is the chief content officer, and Dave Waldron was our audio engineer today. Thank you for joining us on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.